Sci-Fi Show Outcast. Welcome to Sci-Fi Show Outcast 46. It's my great pleasure today to bring you an interview with well-known author Orson Scott Card. And we talk about all sorts of stuff, including his new book Empire, which, if you haven't read it, I highly recommend it, and I guess I should do a book review of it at some point. So, enjoy the interview. Thank you for joining us on the Sci-Fi Show today, Orson Scott Card.
Hi.
So first up, can you tell me a bit about yourself, who you are and what your background is?
Well, I'm an American writer of science fiction and fantasy, primarily. I write a lot of other things. I also teach at a university, more of a hobby than anything else, because it's an unpaid position. I just pop in and teach the odd class, and I do whatever else looks entertaining.
Fair enough. So how long have you been writing for?
Well, in one sense, of course, ever since I learned to read, haven't we all? But seriously writing with the intention of compelling other people, if possible, to see what I've made up. I began as a playwright when I was in college. I was 17 years old when I first started adapting books for Reader's Theater, and then eventually started writing plays from scratch. And so I thought of myself as a playwright for quite a few years. But I found out that you can lose money, even with a hit play. The story of the film, The Producers, is not far off the mark. Problem is, I don't see why they had to go to so much trouble to try to lose money. You can have a hit and still lose money. And so in order to make money, to pay for my theater habit, I turned my hand to writing fiction. Then science fiction is the logical place to go, because science fiction has a short fiction market, unlike most of the other genres. But it's one where, in the science fiction field, as soon as you sell some short stories, then you try to write novels, because the short stories don't pay well enough that you can actually live from that. And so new writers write short stories usually first and then move on. And there's always room for new writers to come along. Besides, science fiction is a field that's hungry for something new all of the time. And so if you have a new voice, if you have new stories to tell that nobody's heard before, or at least a new milieu in which to set them, then you're going to find yourself with a shot at being published in the magazines. And so I was able right away, the first story that I submitted once I became serious about trying to do it was Ender's Game, and it was bought by Ben Bova at Analog. The odd thing is that he asked for a revision in it, and my first thought was, well, no, this is the story that I want to sell. So I offered it to somebody else. I offered it to Jim Main at Galaxy, and Jim turned it down. So then I went back to Ben, and he had asked me to cut the story in half. I just thought that was impossible. So what I really thought was, what does he really want? He wants it to feel shorter. It feels too long. And so I read through it and thought, okay, here's why it feels too long. I have too many battles in the battle room. So I cut out one battle and cut another description of a battle in half. That was four pages gone. In the process, I added another page worth of other details and then sent it back and didn't remind him he asked me to cut it in half. I just said, I hope this deals with the problems. Apparently it did. He bought it, published it, and my career was launched. But I still feel like a playwright who was sort of captured by science fiction. But let's pretend that you're a grown-up. Whatever they pay you for and you can feed a family with, that's what you end up doing.
Fair enough. So where do your story ideas come from, if that's not too general a question?
Well, you know, the funny thing is I teach writing classes, and one of the first things I have them do is what I call 1,000 ideas in an hour. Take the whole group and just ask them questions, and they come up with amazing answers. The answers they come up with are the seeds of the story. But then I send them out two by two. I got this from Aldous Budrus, a technique that he uses, and have them experience the town that we're in for the workshop as writers. That is, just look at everything and ask questions. Why is this way? What could be different about it? That sort of thing. And by the time they come back, they realize that they are surrounded by millions of story ideas, that story ideas are so cheap and easy. The hard thing is finding the structure of the story, finding where it should begin, finding the characters in it. So it's not so much a matter of finding ideas. Those are easy. It's learning how to recognize what aspects of it become an entertaining story and finding the way to shape it. Now, you know, I'm 35 years into this career, And the thing that still surprises me is how hard it still is to find the proper beginning for a story. I'm working on a fantasy series right now that I'm just starting. And I've written now two openings. Both of them were, you know, I'm a competent writer. They were well written, but it just wasn't working. And I have finally found the right opening for it. But it's very, very hard to work your way into something new.
So I recently finished reading your new book, Empire.
Yes.
Where did the idea for that come from? Is it a prediction of things to come?
Well, the original idea actually came with a game design company. I had been working with them on their project, Advent Rising, and I was going to write a novel based on that. But that project was actually dying because the publisher of the game had been, let's just say it kindly, they were a little flaky. And they had released the game too early before all the bugs were worked out, and so the game did not do as well as it should have. And they hung on to the rights. It was a nasty situation. But the same group of game designers who I loved, I mean, they became friends and they're extraordinarily talented, were working on this project called Empire. Now, they didn't really have a story yet. What they had was a situation which was a civil war between blue states and red states in the United States, and, you know, between the right and the left, essentially. And I listened to the idea and I thought, all right, how could such a civil war actually happen? Now, you can flip a coin. You can have it be triggered by something done by people on the right or something done by people on the left. If you look at the history of the world in the last century, right wing and left wing have about an equal record of subverting and taking over other countries. And so for me, it was flipping a coin. And I flipped the coin and decided that it would be a left wing conspiracy. All it really takes is somebody who believes that they are correct, and they're so correct, and the other side is so evil that it's worth resorting to arms, to force, to try to prevail and keep the other guys from winning. And so I took the situation in the United States as I saw it at that time, saw the hateful rhetoric that has been going on both sides, really vicious stuff. What's ironic is when it comes just as much from the side that claims to be tolerant as from the side that admits that it is intolerant of at least some things. But I think that the United States really is on the borderline of getting to where they can plunge into a civil war. I mean, people think of civil war as being unthinkable. They thought that prior to the U.S. Civil War in the 1860s. If it heats up, somebody is going to become so inflamed that they take action. And it's rare for the action not to be preceded by violent words. We have the words. It's been toning down a little bit. There was nothing like a left-wing victory in the last election to calm things down a little bit. Now we have to simply put up with a little smugness from that side, but just as we had to in 1994 when the right wing took over Congress. But it's a dangerous thing. And so with Empire, what I was trying to do was to explore what happens when extremists push to the point where violence ensues. Some people have interpreted the book as being anti-left wing. They just haven't read the whole thing. They have not discovered the fact that the whole book is really about, let's calm down, folks, and not turn this into bloodshed. But, you know, be that as it may, people can take it as they will. I think I've told a good story. So it began with that video game, which is not yet released. However, the movie adaptation from the video game and from my novel that Warner Brothers right now under an option there. And so we're very hopeful that it will develop into something quite big.
I hope it gets made into a film. I think it would make an excellent one, yeah. I really enjoyed it.
I think it would, too. Plus, there are two sequels. I'm just signing with Tor, my publisher, right now, to do a follow-up. The working titles are Secret Empire and American Empire, because I'm, in a way, tracking the character of Torrent in the book. Yeah, since you've read it, you know who I'm talking about, as if he were Octavian Augustus, or, you know, Julius Caesar. In other ways, I'm borrowing from his life, just to show the path toward converting a republic into an empire without anybody actually realizing that you've just carried out a revolution. And so we have characters who do realize what's going on and try to stop him, but they're perceived as traitors instead of being perceived as liberators. Rather, as Brutus was perceived as a traitor by many or most.
Okay. Now, is my understanding correct? You're, in fact, a Mormon?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Were you raised as a Mormon, or...?
Yes. I'm from an old Mormon family. In fact, I'm a great-great-grandson of Brigham Young. So it's in the family. But that doesn't mean that, you know, you have to believe what you're told. I went through, as practically every Mormon I know goes through, the time when you decide, well, you know, in fact, the Mormon Church almost requires you to make a decision of faith on your own of what you believe. And, you know, it's a religion that asks you to put it to the question, to put it to the test. It's not one of those don't ask questions, just believe what your dad believes. Quite the contrary, it's you shouldn't believe anything just because somebody else believes it. Work it out for yourself. And so I did in my adolescence and years following, but I'm definitely a believing, committed member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Okay. So how does your Mormonism influence your writing style or influence your writing ideas and stuff?
As little as possible. I served a mission for the Mormon Church. I've been a proselytizer, and anybody who wants to learn about the Church from me, I'm perfectly happy to teach them one-on-one, quietly. But my fiction is not well served if it becomes a religious tract, and my religion is not well served by somebody trying to preach it in fiction. I think that the issues involved in the Mormon religion are way too important to be trivialized by fictionalizing them per se. Now, I will take stories from Mormon history or scripture or, you know, any other scripture, any source I can use that is interesting to me, and I'll turn them into stories, but that's not the same thing as doctrines or beliefs. So I don't preach in my fiction. Now, I also know that because Mormonism, part of my, you know, the very fabric of my being, the way I think at the deepest level, Mormonism plus all the other things that have influenced me are all going to show up without any conscious intervention on my part. So I don't pretend that there aren't Mormon ideas here and there in my fiction. I just know that whenever I see them visibly popping up, I slap them down. So that if I'm conscious of it, it won't be there. And so I try to keep my fiction pure storytelling as much as possible, which is one of the reasons why I was so irritated when people took Empire as if it were a political tract from my views. What I gave was the political views of my characters. For instance, I have characters running around Washington, D.C. with guns who are not authorized to have those guns, and personally, I believe in gun control. I don't think those guys should have a right to own those guns, but they do, and so I had the characters do what they do, not what I would have been doing or what I would have wanted them to be doing at any given moment. So people get confused sometimes, and they think that a fiction writer is doing what, wish fulfillment? We usually write our nightmares, not our dreams. And so you'll find characters who believe things very different from what I believe. I let my characters speak for themselves. And so often my books will have as eloquent as possible a presentation of ideas that I think are crap. But, you know, that's part of what fiction writing is about, is to put yourself inside someone else's head and imagine a world that isn't currently in existence.
Okay. It's interesting that people read a lot into what your characters are doing and assume that reflects what you're doing, but you're saying that it doesn't reflect that at all.
Well, I'm, at least not consciously, not deliberately on my part.
No, fair enough. So, can I ask, where do you stand politically?
Squarely in the middle, which is actually impossible because, but I, if you average my position, then it turns out in the middle. There are areas where I absolutely agree with moderate right-wing positions, places where I agree with, actually in some cases, rather radical left-wing positions. And so politically right now I'm a Democrat, but I class myself as an embarrassed Democrat because the extreme left-wing of my party, which seems to be ruling the party right now, is borderline idiotic. Things like the religion of global warming that we're seeing right now, where the science is simply not with them. And yet they're pushing not just to have their views prevail, but to silence the opposition. I mean, I'm tired now. I'm a little nervous about hearing quite a few people on the left saying, the discussion is over. Let's end this silly discussion. Global warming is happening, and we've got to do something about it. I'm just thinking, well, global warming is happening, but the sun seems to be causing it. And what do you plan to do? Turn off this? You know, if you can find the off switch on the sun, I really don't want you to trip it. But it's just one of those things where you just think, can't we look at the evidence before we take radical political steps to destroy our own economy in service of an idea that seems not to hold water? At the same time, on the right wing, you know, people talk about laissez-faire capitalism as being a good thing, and I just think, boy, if we didn't have government regulation of capitalism, you pinheads, you guys would be the first ones to be absolutely terrified and scream for it to be put back. Don't you read any history? I guess that's what I want to keep saying to people on the left and the right is, don't you read any history? Don't you have any understanding of what happens when you do this? This isn't even hard to figure out. But that's just the way that politics are. And those of us who do read history, I almost said both of us, because I feel sometimes like it's only me and one other guy who are paying any attention to history. We just have to do our best to try to explain to people why the thing that they're trying to do has been tried before and it doesn't work, or it works, but it's really got awful consequences.
Okay.
Is there such a thing as a radical moderate?
That would be the challenge to find.
Yes.
So, you commented you've got a fantasy book series coming up. What other sorts of things have you got coming up in the future?
Oh, lots of different things. Some of them are simply fun commercial little projects. I actually have an Ender's Game Christmas book coming out. It's nobody else. You know, this is not a sweet, feel-good, ain't Christmas wonderful book. It's called A War of Gifts, and it's as nasty and bitter as anything else that I've put in Battle School. But it is Battle School, and it is Christmas time, and Santa Claus is involved. So that will be fun. I have a collaboration with a very good friend of mine and an extremely talented young writer. He and I were working together to adapt my short story Malpractice into a film, and he wrote the screenplay based on ideas that he and I developed together. We developed the story to lengthen it, and then we realized that our best shot at getting it made into a film was to make it into a book first. So we collaborated on the book. Tora is going to be bringing out it. It's called Invasive Procedures. It's coming out this summer, and I think people will be thrilled at finding this new voice that I've collaborated before with Catherine Kidd. True collaboration, where we wrote alternate chapters and then revised each other. And people, it's kind of funny, people speculated on which parts were mine and which were hers, and they were wrong on every point. I mean, they always identified as mine the things that were hers, and always identified as hers the things that were mine. So I thought, well, we must have achieved something here. I'm not sure what. But people will be thrilled, I think, with what Aaron and I do together. And we're hoping to do a couple more novel adaptations from short stories of mine that are also film projects of ours. I'm hoping this launches Aaron's career. He's an extraordinarily talented young man and deserves to have his own place on the bookshelves.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to join us on the Sci-Fi Show today, Orson Scott Card.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks.
Well, I hope everybody enjoyed that interview, and I'll talk to you next time. The Sci-Fi Show is copyright Jason Rennie, 2006. It's released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, and the song Big Planet is used by permission of Nova Surfer. More great Nova Surfer tracks can be found at novasurfer.nl.